this is Ukraine Calling, a weekly roundup of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main story. I'm Marta Dechok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here are the headlines that caught my attention this week.
Well, we're building up now to the final of the men's 100 meters. Oh, they're away, and Gatlin got away brilliantly, and he's ahead of the field at the moment, and Bolt going very near. Comes Usain Bolt! Usain Bolt storming through, he takes it again, Blake gets the silver!
Наши спецслужбы предотвратили проникновение на территорию Крыма диверсионно-разведывательной группы. Министерство обороны Украины, те люди, которые захватили в свое время власть в Киеве и продолжают ее удерживать, вместо того, чтобы искать способы мирного урегулирования, перешли к практике террора.
Збройних сил України, Національної гвардії, Служби безпеки України. Особлива увага прикордонникам в районах Криму та в районі Лінізі.
While athletes were competing for gold in Rio, Russia turned up the heat in Crimea. On Wednesday, Russia issued a statement that they had foiled Ukrainian attempts to conduct terrorist acts in Crimea and that two Russians had been killed by Ukrainians. Russia's President Putin accused Ukraine of trying to provoke a conflict, that there were no prospects for continuing the Minsk peace process, and that Russia would hold war games in the Black Sea. The story began on Tuesday, when Ukrainian media began reporting that Russia had closed the border with Crimea. Ukrainians living in Crimea, and those who have left but have relatives living there, have traveled back and forth since the annexation in 2014, although they had to go through various checkpoints. Once Russia's accusations hit the headlines on Wednesday, Ukraine responded. It denied any attempts at incursions into Crimea and called Putin's claims preposterous. Ukraine's President Poroshenko asked for immediate talks with Russia, the United States, Germany, and France. He put all of Ukraine's security services on high alert and asked Ukrainians not to travel to Crimea for the time being. The United Nations Security Council held an emergency meeting on the issue. The U.S. State Department and the EU reportedly called on both Russia and Ukraine to reduce tensions near the administrative boundary between Crimea and Ukraine. We'll be bringing you commentary on this from Ukraine's former Foreign Minister Volodymyr Ohrysko, two experts in Kyiv, and a voice from Brazil later in the show. In other news, the OSCE reported a slight de-escalation in hostilities in the Donbas war this week. Ukrainian authorities said that there were 4 days when there were no casualties. But over the week, 6 soldiers were killed, 35 were wounded. And on Thursday, 2 children were wounded near Mariinka. A Kyiv judge was charged with taking bribes this week. Detectives of Ukraine's anti-corruption bureau caught Mykola Haus with $150,000, which he had buried in a jar in his garden. The judge Haus did not appear in court to face the charges, but he will be unable to flee the country since his passport was confiscated during the search. And MP Oleksandr Onishenko has been put on Ukraine's wanted list. Ukraine Calling listeners may remember that last month we reported that Parliament had stripped him of his parliamentary immunity. He was then charged with embezzlement from the state-run company Ukrhazvydobuvanya during the previous government. He is accused of causing a $1.6 billion loss to the state budget. Ukraine also asked Interpol to put Mr. Onishenko on their wanted list, since he is reportedly living in London, England. What you may not have known is that in 2012, he competed in equestrian events for Ukraine during the London Olympics. On the 9th of August, Kyiv hosted a roundtable on the occasion of Indigenous Peoples Day. Leaders of the Crimean Tatars, Karaites, and Krimchaks, all from the Crimean Peninsula, gathered in the capital to discuss the past, the present, and future prospects. As of Friday, Ukraine was ranking 38th in the Rio Olympic Games. They got their first medal on Monday. Serhiy Kulish won silver in the men's 10-meter air rifle. Oleg Vernayev got the second silver in men's individual all-round gymnastics. And Olga Karlan got bronze in women's fencing. During the last Olympics in London in 2012, Ukraine ranked overall 14th. The first time Ukraine ever competed in the Olympic Games was in 1994. Its first ever gold medal winner was Vyacheslav Ulinik from Mariupol, a city that today is kilometers from the front line. He became the world's top wrestler 3 years after Ukraine became independent. To discuss war, sports, and politics, Ukraine Calling spoke to Ukraine's former foreign minister Volodymyr Ohrysko, two experts in Kyiv, Brian Mefford, a business and political consultant, author of the popular Ukrainian political blog, an Atlantic Council non-resident fellow, and Michael Ghetto, who worked on the 1984 Los Angeles Olympic Games, is an international development and elections consultant, and reportedly an encyclopedia on sports and politics. And Jairo de Nascimento in Brazil. Volodymyr Ohrysko was Ukraine's foreign minister in 2008 when Russian tanks rolled into Georgia during the Beijing Olympics. So he has an insider's perspective of how these crises are handled. We reached Mr. Ohrysko in Kyiv by phone. Thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us. I would just like to ask you a few questions.
Yeah, please.
This week, Russia once again ramped up the rhetoric and aggression against Ukraine in Crimea during Olympic Games. This is not the first time that Russia has chosen to act aggressively towards a neighboring state during Olympic Games. What's the significance of the timing of this?
Look, I would say that it is really very stable Russian way of thinking and Russian way of doing foreign policy. I do not think that we should say about some similarities taking into account what has happened in 2008, because it's really stable manner of Russian foreign policy, to be aggressive, to be unpredictable, and to create problems for neighbors, but in fact also for Russia itself. So I would say that today we are in a very different situation. First of all, because we have absolutely new international surroundings. Look, remember, 2008, the Western countries came back to business as usual very quickly, probably in 2-3 months.
After the Georgian War.
Yeah, we have a very strong Western position saying to Russia very directly, or you will stop your aggression, or sanctions will be continued. So now I do not think that we should compare these two situations because Russia is much more weaker, Western is much more stronger, and Ukraine at least is really trying to understand that it should be strong militarily as well.
Well, that was my next question. You, as an insider, you saw how the crisis was resolved in Georgia. What should Ukraine be doing in response to the latest statements coming out of the Kremlin? What can Ukraine be doing? What should it be doing?
In my view, two simple issues are on our agenda. First, to make Ukrainian army as strong as possible. In this sense, of course, we need Western assistance, and I do hope that new American administration will be much more effective in this sense that current administration. And secondly, we should, of course, create international coalition against aggressive Russia, explaining to our colleagues in the West that this Russia is absolutely a different way of thinking, different way of doing business. It is Russia which, practically speaking, reject the Western values, Western style of life, of being a member of international community. So in this sense that Western should really wake up and remove these rosy glasses and understand that Russia, unfortunately, is not a partner. It's only a challenge and the, practically speaking, global threat.
And one more question, if I may. Where do you see this headed? Is this just rhetoric coming out of the Kremlin, or is this a real threat?
In my view, it is another form of political blackmail. Look, they use this instrument very often, and now we have, in my view, the same situation. Economically, Russia is very far from being a power. It's I don't know the exact figure, but probably it is a little bit more than 1.5% of world GDP. Even if we are looking at Russian military capacities, they are also very far from being at least adequate to the NATO, or saying, if we compare this with the United States, with this country. So it is only how they can threaten the Western society to say, we will use tactical nuclear weapons, we will attack, for example, not only Ukraine, but also some Baltic states, and he will never use Article 5 of the Washington Treaty. Unfortunately, many people in the West are really have really being afraid that Putin can do it. But in my view, it is only once again this political blackmail to show to everyone in the West that he can do what he will do. In my view, we should really all together, Ukraine and the international community, we should all together stop this policy. Otherwise, it will be really great threat for all of us.
Thank you very much for your insight, and let's hope to speak to you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
In 2008, during the Beijing Olympics, Russian tanks crossed into Georgia, and there was a short but very deadly war. And as a result, Georgia lost part of its territory, South Ossetia and Abkhazia, and it's now a frozen conflict. The Rio Olympic Games started last week, and within a few days, Russia was making statements that Ukraine is sponsoring terrorism, attempting terrorist activities in Crimea, that two Russians have died, and President Putin said that the Minsk process has no future. To talk about sports, politics, and war, we have two guests with us in studio today. We have Brian Mefford, who is a business and political consultant based in Kyiv for 17 years, author of a popular Ukraine political blog, and a non-resident fellow with the Atlantic Council, and Michael Ghetto, who worked on the 1984 LA Olympics and is an international development elections consultant in Kyiv, who is reportedly an encyclopedia on sports and politics. Thank you very much for joining us. Mr. Mefford, I'd like to start with you. We were planning to talk about politics and sports, but with everything that's happened in Russia recently, let's talk a little bit about what that's happening. Many are focusing on the Olympics, and Russia is making this statement, ramping up pressure, causing the United Nations to have an emergency council meeting. Is the timing of this significant? Ukraine is about to face its 25th anniversary in a few weeks, but the Olympics, this escalation, is the timing?
Well, there's two historical precedents. First of all, August 8th of 2008, when Russia invaded Georgia during the Beijing Olympics, number one, and then number two, after the Sochi Games in February of 2014, days afterwards, the Russians annexed Crimea. So those are two historical precedents. The third thing, as you alluded to, is Ukraine is coming up on its 25th anniversary of its independence, something that Russia, or at least Vladimir Putin, doesn't like to talk about. He considers Ukraine to be part of Russia. So in perhaps an effort to spoil Ukraine's celebrations on the 25th and to remind Ukraine of the Russian army on the borders to the north and the east and south, that could explain some of these recent activities in Crimea.
I would agree with what Brian said. And in addition, there's an ongoing diversion by Putin from what's happening in Russia. Economic growth is negative in Russia, and Russia is an emerging market, which means they need to grow significantly. And the Russian economy has not grown for a variety of reasons in the last couple of years, even going back before, certainly before the annexation of Crimea and the beginning of the hostilities and the war in eastern Ukraine and the Donbas. So Putin is a master at at diverting the Russian people from what's happening in their own country. And
international attention.
Absolutely, no question. And sometimes we very easily fall for it. That and the fact that I think also there is there's some other factors that may play into this. There's quite a bit of bitterness in Russia right now about the Russian Olympic team, which has been thinned out. Many people believe they should have been completely left out of the Olympics, but there's quite that's yet another grievance that Russia has, and that could be playing a role here as well. And just to back up what Brian said earlier, the 25th anniversary is something that really sticks in the Russian craw of the Ukrainian.
You touched on the Olympics, which is what I really wanted to talk about today. You were involved in the 1984 Olympics, and that was one Olympic Games that was very political. Sports and politics are always related, and Olympic Games are about politics as much as they are about sports, because it's nations competing against each other. And sometimes nations pull out of the Olympic Games as a political statement. What's the political dimension that you see in the Olympic Games in 2016? You started talking about the doping scandal, but is there more there?
Well, I mean, yeah, the Olympics, and I would say global competition is always political. As long as they run up flags at medal ceremonies, there's a certain amount of nationalism that goes with the Olympics and global championships and global sport. There's in of itself, there's nothing really wrong with that. Ukrainians should be proud when they see their flag and they see their athletes doing well, Americans and Canadians as well, and anybody else. And that's positive. But in Russia, sport has become a part of the political hierarchy and the political system. It's intimately involved. And this doping scandal has hit hard at Russians, because they like to think of themselves as a sporting superpower. And in many respects, Russia has been, yes. But Russia also, at its crown jewel Olympic event, basically defrauded the Olympics, in my view.
The crown jewel being?
The Sochi. And that was it. They spent over $50 billion on putting on this elaborate show. And it turns out that, at least half of their medal winners were doped up. And this, at first, there was a lot of denial, and now they've come to the, they're trying to, throw themselves at the mercy of the international sporting community. They've admitted some problems, but this is a part of the larger narrative that the West in the world, but the West in particular, is against Russia, and is excluding Russia from international institutions, whether it's trade, whether it's national security, and in this case, sport, which is, in the overall scheme of things, not that important. But that's a big part of the Russian narrative, is that they're not a part, and there are some athletes that are in Rio that are participating, but the big sports, the name sports, Russia's not going to be in the equation.
When politics enters sports, especially during a time of war, Ukraine and Russia are at war. How does this affect the athletes? That's either one of you.
Well, I think that there's some rivalry, to be sure. Russians and Ukrainians have competed against each other before in past Olympics. There has been some already in Rio. There has been a couple of dust-ups between Ukrainian athletes and Russian news media. Who've tried to trip them up a little bit. There was a Ukrainian athlete, and by the way, I should say that doping is not a Russian problem.
Indeed.
It is not. It is that they have massively institutionalized it. But it's not. It is not a Russian problem. We've of course in the United States we've had some dopers. Specifically, there's one sprinter who will be participating, and there'll be a lot of second guessing if he wins the gold medal in the 100 to the 200 meters. Justin Gatlin. There's others too, but not institutionally as is the case in Russia. And I like to say it's kind of like this. It would be like the Central Intelligence Agency managing the U.S. Olympic effort in Rio. CIA doesn't have anything to do with it, unless you're a conspiracy theorist.
And you were about to tell us about this dust-up between a Ukrainian athlete
right.
And a journalist.
Right, there was a Ukrainian sprinter who had served a doping suspension. She was asked by a Russian journalist, "So what's the difference? You're here, our people aren't." And she said, "Well, you know, I don't think it's quite fair that there are Russian athletes that aren't here because some of them probably haven't doped." And that was not, she was missing the point that this is an institutional problem in Russia. And of course, the Russian journalist, quote unquote journalist, went running back to Moscow saying, "See, even this drug cheat in Ukraine, you know, admits that we're not being treated fairly." So, and then after that, the Russian Athletics Federation, or sorry, the Ukrainian Athletics Federation said, "Don't talk to Russian journalists. Just don't talk to them. Stay away from them."
Brian, back to you. The timing of this, we started with the timing of this, but during the Olympics, are we likely to see further escalation of tensions between Russia and Ukraine?
There's only one person who knows that, and that's Vladimir Putin. I mean, that's how deep is the ocean kind of question. So, you know, we hope and pray that's not going to be the case. We hope and pray that the worst of the hostilities are over. But unfortunately, that's always a question. And every day Vladimir Putin wakes up and he makes a decision. And so, you know, the elements are there for an increase in the hostilities, no doubt about that. If you look at the number of casualties that have taken place this summer, they've actually escalated quite dramatically to their highest point since August of 2014. So that's very worrisome. And there's been a steady drumbeat where the tension has been turned up all summer. Now, that could be the guns of summer. If you're going to make war, it's easier to do it in summer than to try to do it in the cold of January in Kyiv. But without a doubt, it's a worrisome sign. We hope that these are simply maneuvers and not going to be to escalate into a full-fledged invasion or conflict.
Russia's President Putin likes to portray himself as an athlete. We know those images of him in the judo outfit, on horseback. Is there a dimension here that the president/athlete is waging further escalation during the Olympics?
Could be. It's hard to get inside Putin's head sometimes. I think sport is all a part of the Russian narrative, because the Russians, going back to Soviet days, have been very successful in sport. There could be part of that, with the Olympics occurring, there could be something to that. Yeah. I also think that, because this Olympic year every year is a U.S. presidential year. And I think this year is particularly profound, given the fact that Russia has allegedly been involved in the U.S. political process. So that could be a factor in all of this. I still don't think we know exactly what's happened down in Crimea. We just don't know. It seems that the timing does seem rather strange.
Well, the United Nations Security Council is meeting over this issue, and we will wait to see what, if anything, comes out of that meeting. Thank you very much for joining us. Jairo de Nascimento is an active member of the Ukrainian community in Brazil. He has served in numerous positions, including the director of the Ukrainian-Brazilian Central Representation. He was very involved in Brazil's Euromaidan. We reached Mr. de Nascimento via Skype in Curitiba. Thank you very much for joining us. You are in Brazil, where the Olympics are happening. Can you tell us what's the mood like in Brazil now that the Olympic Games have started?
Of course, we are involved in this atmosphere that involves the Olympics Games. People are very excited about the Olympics, and it's very important to say also that we are in the middle, almost finishing process of the impeachment of the president. The day before yesterday, the senators voted, and it is almost the last step to kick off the President Dilma.
Well, with the Olympics and the political scandal, how much attention is Russia receiving in Brazil's mass media? The issue of the doping of the athletes and also the war in Ukraine more broadly?
I can say that the press here, Russia is too far from Brazil. It's almost in other planet. And the attention over Russian activities, including the invasion of Ukraine, Crimea, we can watch this on television, but it's not very, very, very much. It's a little. Very few attention. About the scandal of the doping, the repercussion was much more repercussion. The athletes who couldn't come to the Olympics we can see them almost all the time on TV, on the headlines.
So that caught the attention. How about the latest statements that are coming out of Russia that Ukraine was planning terrorist activities and trying to destabilize Crimea and that the peace process is failing? Is this receiving attention given the Olympics and given your own political scandals in Brazil?
No. Almost nothing. Here in Brazil is about 500,000 people, between 200 million Brazilians. So we are, we can say that we are a very, not very big community. We are very active, especially here in the south of Brazil, in the state of Paraná and Santa Catarina. Even in São Paulo, the biggest city of the country, there are a lot of Ukrainians. And so we hear and we go for these news about what is happening in Ukraine. But Brazilians in general, they are not informed and they don't have idea what is going on in Ukraine right now.
Well, as you said, Russia and Ukraine are very far from Brazil, so perhaps that's one of the reasons.
Maybe. The government of the President Dilma was allied to Russia's government, so it didn't help too much. For example, Brazil until now didn't take an official point against what Russia is doing in Ukraine. For example, we are complaining. We requested an audience to the new minister of foreign relations. But until right now, we didn't get an answer.
Well, let's hope that the new minister will listen to the requests and more attention is drawn to this issue of what's going on in this part of the world. Jairo, thank you very much for joining us and sharing the perspective of what the war in Ukraine looks like from Brazil.
Okay, I thank you. I hope to see you soon. Thank you very much. Slava Ukraine!
Crimea used to be a popular vacation spot for Ukrainians. After the peninsula was annexed by Russia in spring of 2014, Ukrainians have had to look elsewhere. And they've been discovering other gems in their own country. The Carpathian Mountains have always been a tourist destination, but now they've replaced Crimea as the number one choice for Ukrainians who choose not to go abroad for their holidays. Lviv, the medieval capital of Western Ukraine, is going through a tourism boom. So is the cosmopolitan port city of Odessa, which sits on the Black Sea coast and has beaches. Both cities are full of tourists these days. And less well-known spots are becoming popular too, like Askania Nova in the Kherson region. It's a biosphere reserve in southern Ukraine with flora and fauna from all over the world, including six species that have become extinct in their own homelands. It also has ancient burial mounds and stone figures, as well as reportedly breathtaking views of the steppe, Ukraine's prairies. To give you a flavor of the ancient and contemporary, I'd like to play you a song this week by a band called Vonerges. It's called 1,000 Years, and it's on their new album, Drum Perehude. Athletes are competing for medals in Rio. Russia is raising tensions in Crimea. And Ukraine is preparing to celebrate its 25th anniversary of independence. Next week, the new electronic income declaration for government officials will come into effect. We'll be following these and other stories. Tune in next weekend for a new episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Marta the Truck in Kyiv. Let me know what you think. Our email address is ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. Thanks for listening.